How does an $11.2 billion state budget sound? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. The governor sends the legislature a budget that includes $307 million in capital projects. That's half what it contained this year. The governor's budget team is with us on the show today. Our number is 1-800-478-8255, toll-free. That's 478-TALK, toll-free. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422. Email talk@aprn.org. The administration and revenue commissioners and the budget director coming up on Talk of Alaska.
Is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Alaska Public Radio Network promotes Alaska's cultures, regions, and ethnic diversity, including a commitment to informing and empowering Alaska's Native peoples.
All right. We're establishing communication with our member station, KTOO, in Juneau, where two members of the governor's cabinet are with us. Let's see if they've come through yet. Juneau and Karen Rehfeld, are you with us?
Yes, good morning. I'm here. Thank you very much.
How do you do?
Very nice to be on your show this morning.
All right. And also, Annette Kreitzer, are you with us?
I am.
All right. Annette is Commissioner of Administration. And here in the studio in Anchorage is Pat Galvin, Commissioner of Revenue. Pat, welcome back. Talk of Alaska.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, it's great. Now, the reason I've called this meeting... actually, as you know, the administration called us and said, hey, how would you like to do the budget on Talk of Alaska? And we said, great, let's do it. And so I'm really going to kind of ask you, Karen, to give us a basic explanation of where we're going this time around, as the governor kind of did yesterday.
Okay.
Basically, that we're looking at an operating budget just a little bit below what it is this year.
Yes, we are. The governor, as you know, rolled out the budget yesterday, and the total budget comes in at $4.9 billion of state general funds and $11.2 billion total funds. That includes permanent fund and federal funds, other funds in the budget. It is below the current year budget by about 7% overall. We also are proposing to bring the next year budget in below what the current revenue forecast is. It's a pretty streamlined budget, provides for essential services for Alaskans, funds the education formula, does provide a capital budget that's overall about 4.5% below the current year budget. So particularly given the revenue situation that we're facing at the moment, we thought this was a good place to be, a responsible budget to bring out and bring before the legislature, who ultimately has the decision-making power and the appropriation power. So we're rolling it out and hoping that a lot of people take a look at it and provide us with their comments and get engaged with the legislature as they consider the budget in January.
Well, as you know, everybody got concerned during the legislative session because the price of crude oil was so high. And then the barges came in, and the fuel that people are buying now all over Bush, Alaska is at kind of a maximum high price right now. And there was enough concern that there was an energy resource rebate. But there's no sign of that in this new draft budget, is there?
The resource rebate that was approved this summer was a one-time item, especially to share the wealth that high oil price brought to Alaskans, and certainly would help folks with their energy costs, looking at purchasing fuel and filling their tanks for the winter. So those actions by the governor and the legislature this summer, I think, were very appropriate and certainly went a long way to helping people prepare for the winter. And then, of course, as we all know, there's been a lot of change since where we were with the price of oil this past summer, and I'm sure Commissioner Galvin can speak about that.
Well, let's ask him to, Pat. Basically, you've got a revenue forecast right now that would seem by all indications to be rather optimistic.
Yeah, it is a struggle at this point. We have experienced such a rapid drop in the price that we're trying to identify whether or not that's truly a long-term level that we're going to be at. Most of the folks, when you look at the underlying supply and demand on a global scale, would say that you would expect to equalize somewhere much higher than that, about where we're estimating the price next year. But the question becomes, are we facing a global economic slowdown that's going to last more than a year or more? We're a year into the U.S. recession, probably about the same on a global scale. And the question becomes, is this going to begin to see an upward move, which would then boost the oil price as global demand is recovering? Or is it going to be an extended period of time? And right now, nobody really knows. We've got a tremendous split of opinion in the folks who monitor the oil price. We've got folks on one side saying that we're looking at a price in the 30s, 40s, 50s for the next year, and you got others who are saying it's going to be 70 to 100 over the next year. So we're just going to be watching closely as we go through the next couple months, because it will reveal a much clearer picture of where the global economy is going to be heading over the next couple of years as more information becomes available.
And you are saying that perhaps rather than do the usual spring revenue forecast, you might do that, but do something in between, something before then, that would give the legislature a little better fix on what to do?
Yeah, we'll be watching it and seeing if there's a reason and an opportunity to provide sort of an interim picture of where we see things going, so that we don't end up with, particularly if things are going to be changing to a large degree, we don't want to just drop that on them at the end of the session after they've worked on the budget for 3 months or more. So we'll be checking things as we go through the next month or two and deciding whether or not to put out something on an interim basis.
Karen Rayfield, if lawmakers choose to go with a larger capital budget than what the administration is suggesting, which seems likely because right now they're all going to be looking to their own districts and whether there's something in there for them, and you know, traditionally they get something. Should they increase the capital budget? Where would the governor come down? Does she know in terms of looking for reductions elsewhere?
I think that clearly there's going to be room for change in the budget that we presented, and the governor's very and has already met with legislative leaders and talked with them about her willingness to work with them on all of the components of the budget, including the capital budget. If our revenue forecast comes through and stays at that dollar amount, certainly that gives more room and more flexibility. I think that some of the bigger discussion is going to be in the budget that we've proposed currently. We've utilized as some non-general fund sources that haven't been tapped before. Legislators may decide that they aren't ready to utilize those fund sources yet, or would like to redirect those funds that we're proposing to some other projects. But I think clearly there's a lot of room for us to work with lawmakers as they consider the budget. The operating side of the budget, as we have pointed out, is really a maintenance level budget. We were able to fund the education formula in our increase, and also the bargaining unit contracts. But I think we've come in with a very, very responsible budget on the operating side. Part of the goal in rolling the budget out the way we did was to provide some stability here for not only state government, but also for our communities. As you know, revenue sharing and our retirement system deposits help all of our communities across the state deal with their costs at the local level. So we thought it was important to maintain funding for those critical programs that help all of our communities. Another thing I think it's important to point out is that over the past couple of years, the governor and the legislature have been able to, because of the price of oil, put a tremendous amount of money into savings accounts, into our reserves. We have over $5 billion set aside just over the past 2 years alone, adding to the funds in the constitutional budget reserve and the statutory budget reserve. So the state does have some tools and some ability to adjust as these revenue situation as the revenue situation changes, which is good for us.
Yeah, let's turn to Commissioner Kreitzer. Commissioner, how sure are we that we have contracts here?
Well, we are we're in the middle of negotiating several contracts. We're negotiating with correctional officers right now. We've got three maritime contracts, and the union called Labor Trades and Crafts (LTC). And I think everyone can read the paper. I think they hear the news. They see where the state's fiscal position is. And I just try to negotiate fairly and negotiate contracts that are sustainable over the long term here.
So we're still working on it, but this budget is based on the contracts that you're offering.
It is based on the contracts that have already been negotiated. That will come in with a number for the governor to include in the amended budget to reflect any agreements that we're able to come to, and that'll be funded in this next legislative session.
Now, I have not been able to look in enough detail yet to see, but what does this budget do with the retirement cost, the rising cost of retirement? And
sure. You're referring maybe to the unfunded liability that's out there for
exactly.
Our pension and health care. The budget contributes $451 million total toward the unfunded liability cost for our retirement systems, and we just keep chipping away at that, and the current amount of that unfunded liability is about $7.6 billion. We suspect that it may in actuality be greater than that because of what's happened in the stock markets, but right now the published number is $7.6 billion, and so we're continuing. The legislature and the governor made a commitment in the last couple of years to not allow that unfunded liability to just continue to grow, but to continue to begin to really work toward getting that unfunded liability paid down.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know, but Alaska is one of the few states that pre-funds its health and pension plans. So in some other states where there is fear or concern about folks losing their pensions, that's not the case with the situation in Alaska.
Yeah, and we really don't know, but as it stands right now, they've gone over to the other system where each new state employee has their own account that's separate.
Right, defined contribution, right.
Yeah.
As an investment account, right.
But there is some rumbling once again in the legislature to switch that back.
Right. There is a concern from some folks who want to take another look at that, and we're prepared to enter into that discussion when the legislature begins. All summer long, I've had conversations with various union boards, and we've talked about this issue. So we know it's going to come back, and we'll have a conversation. I always tell folks, you know, we may disagree, but we don't have to be disagreeable.
Well, Commissioner, would you say that Alaska workers are paid enough to attract qualified applicants for the positions that come open?
Well, when I was appointed commissioner in 2007 and during my confirmation hearing process in the legislature, I was asked, what's the one big issue you want to work on? And the issue that I have attempted to work on is recruitment and retention, and I think we have made great strides. It isn't always just about the salaries. It is about working conditions. It's about the state stopping from shooting itself in the foot with our own hiring practices. And so we've been working on some of those things. We have the executive working group that's been meeting and talking about looking at private sector, seeing if there are things in the private sector that we ought to be looking at in terms of what we do as a state. But this budget that the governor rolled out yesterday provides an opportunity for the state to do business differently. Within my own department, I have the Division of Personnel, and I have labor relations and all these other various factions of DOA. But one of the things that I've noticed is that we were walking around and handing out paychecks. And in my mind, that's a waste of state employees' time. We've got other tasks that need to be done. And I think through this budget, we have an opportunity as commissioners to find different ways to do state business, to do it more efficiently.
Well, geez, you know, I'd hate to eliminate the handing out the paychecks, but you're talking about electronic transfer, I assume.
Yeah, not people not getting paychecks. I don't want to scare anybody who might be listening. It's just that, you know, do we really need someone physically walking to your desk and handing you your paycheck? It's a nice thing. It's a, you know, nice way for people to interact, but is it really in the state's best interest if we can't get the filing done to spend our time delivering a paycheck that could be delivered electronically?
I can understand that, but it still takes all the fun out of it.
I'm not known as the commissioner of fun. I have to confess. Jeff Brown says he is the commissioner of fun. So I would not dare to take that title away from him.
He definitely is. Karen Rehfeld, I understand that the governor has basically stepping to the plate on commitment to children with the Denali Kid Care and Head Start.
Yes, about a week or so ago, she rolled out some initiatives that have to do with early learning. There's some funds in the budget now for a preschool pilot, about $2 million, to really look at ways to increase access to quality preschool programs for all children. And we also have an increase in Head Start. And as you may know, Head Start for many, many years, the grant program there was pretty much flat funded. And last year, there was a $600,000 increase in Head Start. And this year, the governor is redirecting some $800,000 to increase Head Start yet again and try to deal with many of the low-income children who are on wait lists for that program. She's also wanting to work with lawmakers to increase and expand Denali Kid Care programs. That will require legislation, and I believe that there is interest in the legislature in working on that. And also, within the school funding formula, there's a significant component for intensive needs students. These are children that need a number of specialized services for them to be successful in their education. That particular piece of the billion-dollar school funding package is about $118 million for intensive students. So there are a lot of efforts and a lot of resources devoted to children in this budget.
All right, let's start. If the three of you are ready, we have three members of the governor's budget team with us on Talk of Alaska today, and let's see what Alaskans have to say. Let's go first to Robert, who joins the program from Shishmaref. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Robert.
Yeah, good morning. I got a question here. You know, after listening to all this price gouging and whatnot, well, not price gouging, but then again, it's a price fix on fuel for the villages in Alaska. Exactly what kind of formula are we using that differs from the lower 48 when they're paying a lot less than what we are? But then again, we're pumping the crude oil out of Alaska. Now, where do we draw the line? Exactly where do we pay the same as the lower 48?
Oh, boy, wouldn't we all like that? Let's try and toss that one to Commissioner Pat Galvin.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, I know the state law department is kind of the point people on this, and it's certainly getting active attention by the legislature. But I'm sure you've got kind of an overview of what's going on with our refineries and so forth.
Yeah, it's actually an interesting situation that we find ourselves in because we're getting pressure from both sides. In other words, we have the issue of the disparity between the price of gasoline in Alaska versus the lower 48, and people looking at it from a historic level saying, hey, previously that gap was much smaller than what we see today, and questioning, you know, what is going on here? Why are we paying so much more than other places? Why is it so sticky coming down as it didn't seem to be so sticky going up? And that's something that the Department of Law is looking at. I know that the legislature is paying a lot of attention to it as well. And the focus in that context goes to the local refineries, which provide the bulk of the gasoline that's consumed within the state. Now, I think Shishmaref may not be getting their gasoline from or their diesel from an in-state refinery, but the market conditions are similar in that we have a relatively small market compared to some other places in the lower 48 where they have a much more efficient market in terms of lowering costs and the economies of scale. But that doesn't explain everything, and I think that's what people are looking at. On the opposite side, what we have is we have the refineries, particularly the one up in North Pole with Flint Hills, saying that they can't survive this economy, and the profit margins that they're being able to enjoy in Alaska are not sufficient to justify ongoing operations. And so it is a situation that really does demand a lot of attention, because we have both the risk of consumers paying too much, but also a sort of alternate risk of losing our in-state refinery, which could put us at an even greater disadvantage when it comes to our prices that we pay. And so I think last week there was an announcement from the governor and Department of Natural Resources that the administration had basically reached an agreement with Flint Hills to look closely at their operations to see what the state can do with regard to ensuring that they are able to make a reasonable profit, and that will also provide some insight into some of the pricing issues that we're dealing with. And so over the next 3 to 6 months, I expect there to be a tremendous amount of public dialogue as information becomes available and people are able to see the sort of tension that exists between a company that's refining oil in Alaska and trying to make a reasonable profit, and consumers who want to make sure we pay as little as possible.
Now, Robert, where does Shishmaref get its fuel? Is that Delta Western, or who brings that in?
I think it's out of Crawley, out of Kotzebue. It's north of Shishmaref.
Yeah, and so that is fuel probably comes out of Seattle?
I believe so. I have no idea on that. I'm pretty sure it does come from Lower 48, like
yeah.
Seattle.
Well, there have been rumblings about looking a little closer at the fuel deliverer, or the people that deliver the fuel, because there is a virtual monopoly in a lot of communities. But as far as I know, nothing's actually happened on that. And as far as the way the price is set, the problem is it is the oil that, you know, goes into the shipment, and you get your shipment in the fall, and that was really high oil prices.
And Steve, that's well, actually an important point, is the timing issue that we face in Alaska, is that because the communities have to make these large bulk purchases, they're not able to time their purchases as you do in other places, where you can go a little thin for some time, live off of your reserves that you might have in some storage tanks, and then when the price drops down, make your purchases on a timely manner. And in most of the villages, they're set to a particular schedule when the barges are going to come in, and they're having to basically float with the market. Now, we are looking at ways in which the state might be able to assist in trying to somehow modulate some of that timing issue, provide some additional support for the villages, and hopefully we'll be able to at least soften some of that blow.
Robert, that's about the best we can do for you right now.
Well, you know, I had another question, because it differs from the Lower 48. You know, when the counties in the Lower 48 purchase their bulk fuel, you know, I'm pretty sure that they have to truck it in. They have the same problem in the wintertime as we do. And once the storms hit the Lower 48, their fuel gets shut down too. And it's the same thing here in Alaska. That's just all I have to say about that. I think we got to get on the same page as Lower 48 and get it down to where we need to, you know, see the sunshine too.
Boy, I'm telling you, a whole lot of people in Western Alaska would really go along with that. Thanks, Robert.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your call. Let's go now to Gregory. He joins the program from Dillingham. When we get him switched in. Hello, Gregory. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hello there, Steve. Perhaps I misunderstood Governor Palin. I hope that's not the truth when she said she was going to cut capital projects in the budget. I mean, that she said she's going to cut things down to the bone. But if there was ever a time to increase job opportunities for Alaskans, it's now. I mean, if I remember the other Great Depression, the state and the Fed government increased spending considerably to cut down on the welfare, the bread lines, just to rebuild roads, bridges, the Hoover Dam. It was a massive government workforce to put money back into the economy.
I think that's Gregory, I think that's a really great point. But as you know, the state has to live within its income, and that those would be a federal programs. I don't think anybody is talking about turning down any public work money from the federal government. Are they, Commissioner Rehfeld?
Absolutely not. I think it would be important to just talk a minute about the capital budget, because the governor's proposal here is to, overall, the capital budget will be down just under 5% from the current year. We are proposing to utilize some other funds, not necessarily general fund, to help get some of those very needed capital projects on the street and keep folks employed. I also think it's important to think about the last 3 years. We've seen some very significant capital budgets, 07, 08, and fiscal 09, all were very very rigorous capital budgets. Those projects are going to be ready to hit the street. There's going to be a number of things happening all over the state. So between employing folks and some of the workforce training that we're going to need when we're looking forward to building a gas line, these are all, I think, important projects that we have out there, and the governor very much would agree that capital spending is important to all our communities.
Commissioner Pat Galvin?
Yes, Steve, I think it's important for Alaskans to be able to differentiate the situation that we hear on the national level with regard to the economic slowdown and what we're experiencing in Alaska. There was a recent newspaper article that came out that talked about each individual state's economy, and of the 50 states, Alaska was the only state that was listed as potentially expanding in our overall economy in the foreseeable future. The rest of the states were all in a recessionary mode. And that's an important thing for us to keep in mind as we are viewing the national stories that are coming out and the struggles and the expectation that the federal government is going to have to take some fairly drastic action to respond to those things along the lines of what the caller indicated. Within Alaska, it's primarily a matter of us keeping on what we're doing. And what Karen has clearly recognized in the budget, and the governor has also recognized, is that maintaining a fairly stable economy is necessary within Alaska, even with our fluctuations in oil prices. It was a very critical part of the governor's message over the last couple of years when we were experiencing record revenues to say, no, we got to live within our means. We got to keep things at a sustainable level. And right now it's showing the benefits of that. We can basically make it through the times of the low revenue by strictly cutting out those things that we can afford to cut out and maintaining those that we need to maintain.
Gregory, thanks for your call.
Yes. Okay, well, on a second note, I personally feel it would be the best time in history to bring the capital home to Alaska, where the bulk of the majority of Alaskans live out, you know, not in Juneau. Move it, and that would really create a lot of employment. The middle class is our survival, our backbone of every country.
All right, Gregory, thanks for that pitch. Before we take our
with
break,
two commissioners down in Juneau right now, wondering which jobs are those?
Yes, budget director Rehfeld, maybe you can clarify the business with the HFC funds that the governor is proposing using for part of the capital spending.
Sure, a couple of years ago, I think it was 2006, the legislature put aside $300 million. For capital spending, and they created sort of a subsidiary account under the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to hold those funds. Over the past couple of years, we're looking at about $39 million in interest also accruing in that account. So it's a funding source that we had proposed over the special session to utilize some of those revenues for gas line expenditures. And at the time, over the summer, the legislature was not inclined to want to appropriate from that fund and asked us to come back during the regular session and talk about gas line appropriations, which we will be talking with them about. But we have proposed in the 2010 budget utilizing about $283 million of those funds, some for gas line projects, some for school construction projects. A couple of major statewide system replacements, one for our state accounting system, which was built in the 1980s, and one is, of course, our tax management and collection system. So we are proposing to utilize those funds for a number of areas which are, we believe, priority items for the state of Alaska. And I know that, lawmakers will be looking carefully at that and making decisions about whether or not they want us to use those funds in this budget cycle and for what, for which projects.
All right. We're talking to Governor Palin's budget team as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Tell Alaska, encouraging listeners to tune to AK every weekend. Check your local public radio station for airtimes. Tell Alaska on the web at tellalaska.com. Since 1978, the Alaska Public Radio Network has brought Alaskan news to more than 250 communities statewide. APRN, the voices of Alaska.
It's Talk of Alaska. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422, and by email, talk@APRN.org. And we got an email from Pete in Fairbanks who wants to boost the alcohol tax. And the instant answer, of course, is that, well, you know, that just goes into the general fund. But Pete's even got an answer to that. He says, look, just like my gym fee helps keep the floors and locker rooms clean, regardless of whether or not I'm the one who messes them up, the money going into the general fund could still displace other money that could be used to address problems related to alcohol. He's saying that there's easily $1 billion in damage that alcohol does, and the tax only brings it in about $35 million a year. So he's all for raising that to I don't think the governor's proposing that. Pat Galvin, got any thoughts on that?
Well, no, just to acknowledge that right now it does bring in about $40 million a year, half of which actually is dedicated to drug and alcohol treatment programs. The other half goes into the general fund, and I think we are one of the highest tax levels on alcohol among states, and there's only so much that you can really expect to generate from those sin taxes. We've kind of boosted up our tobacco and our alcohol taxes over the years. And when we're looking at, a change of 10 cents in the price of oil has swings that that dwarf the potential change in the alcohol tax, it's just a matter of degree in terms of where you want to put your emphasis.
Okay. Well, if you're ready, we'll take some more calls from Alaskans. Let's try Bethel, where Leo joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Leo.
Good morning, Steve, and to the panel and all of Alaska. The question I have is, on November 4, we had the major issue on the bonds, and it was unanimously passed. And seems like after every election, all the bonds are always forgotten, and nobody does a follow up on those bonds.
Yeah, I sure haven't.
Alaska is in major need of repair in all sorts of the infrastructure, and I think that DOT for finally upgrading the road system here in Bethel that has been long overdue and. I'll listen in the air. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Leo. Yeah, let's talk about the bond issues and how quickly those bonds go out and where that money gets spent.
Steve, this is Karen, and There was $315 million in GO bonds approved by the voters in November, and those projects are really are across the state, a number of projects. I know Commissioner Galvin is can talk to you about the timing of the GO bonds and when those bond proceeds will be available for those projects to move forward, but I know Department of Revenue is proceeding with that.
Pat?
And it's just a matter of watching the credit markets. Right now, things are not very favorable. And
no, they have not been. Municipal bonds sometimes have to be withdrawn from the market now.
Well, actually, we went out just 2 weeks ago trying to put out some bonds for the Mat-Su prison, and we weren't able to meet the benchmarks required under the statute in order to be able to issue those bonds. And so that one didn't go forward. We're at, like the oil prices, like everything else, we're at a somewhat unprecedented time in terms of the markets and how they're reacting to the news of the day. And you never know from one day to the next, 1 week to the next, what you're going to expect when you go back out into the market. So right now we're expecting to go out with those general obligation GO bonds in the winter, spring in order to get those projects funded and get DOT operating. But it is going to be somewhat dependent upon what the markets are looking like at that particular time. We don't want to come out and basically subject ourselves to hugely expensive debt at a time when if we waited just a few months, we could get something substantially different.
Yeah, Pat, maybe you can help me understand this because I don't.
I don't know. I don't know who does.
But I remember talking to Dave Rose, and he said, you know, when we started the permanent fund, we just lucked in because we bought all government bonds. That's all we did is bought government bonds, and they were yielding handsomely, and we made all kinds of money off of it. He wasn't advocating that we continue investing in government bonds. But generally, it used to be if you invested in debt, it was more secure kind of investment. You might not get as much yield, but your yield would be more assured, especially if we bought municipals and so forth. I mean, does anybody seriously think the state of Alaska is going to default on its bonds? Why can't you sell these bonds?
Well, right now the credit markets are so skittish that any perception of risk is seen as something that's going to require a big just premium on the price, or basically a drop in the value of that particular bond. And so you start with the Federal Reserve notes, and you begin to see that they're talking about getting close to a 0% interest on the Federal Reserve notes. But when you step off of that, any perception of risk is seeing these tremendous spreads in the price of those. And Alaska's, in decent shape in terms of the overall credit rating and so forth compared to some of these other places that are seeing really dramatic impacts on their ability to borrow. And corporate debt in particular, given the recent failures and the financial markets falling apart, the lack of transparency of the individual securities has caused basically investors to just step away and say, hey, I'm not even going to go there. And so it is interesting where we are right now, what folks in the—
Yeah, I would think there'd be money running around looking for places like this to go.
Well, what the folks in the bond buying business say is that this is the best buying opportunity in the last 50 years.
Yeah.
Basically, everything is undervalued because the systems that are in place have basically kept people from being willing to buy into some of these bonds, even though, as you say, the risk of default is almost nothing, and yet they're selling at levels that are approaching what the more risky corporate bonds were selling for just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And so the underlying risk is not meeting with the price that is available in the market. And so there are opportunities, and these are things that end up correcting. Everybody thinks that, today's the day that the markets are going to act differently from now on, and they never do. They always go back to the way they've always acted. And
right.
So you're going to see a year from now, people are going to be kicking themselves going, we should have jumped in there at the time, because everybody knew that the underlying fundamentals would indicate that, hey, this is a great buying opportunity. And it's only those that actually listen to themselves and go in there and do it that are rewarded a year from now.
Yeah, yeah. I guess there's just so much turmoil right now that everything is very murky and unsettled with the with the financial services all over the place.
Yep.
Interest rates, everything. Yeah.
Fear is a big motivator.
Let's go to Jack, joins the program from North Pole. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Jack.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
Listen, I'm not sure if this is entirely germane to what you guys are talking about right now, but, you know, I think somebody's got to...
We're just guessing right now.
Yeah, that regarding what the gentleman brought up earlier about Flint Hills and the question of profitability given current economic troubles, I mean, I think it needs to be said that that might wash with people that basically are totally ignorant of how, you know, corporate operations work. But when you have operations that are done on 5-year, 10-year forecasts, I don't understand how crises that arise within a matter of weeks can be used to determine price gouging that's concurrently happening, especially when there were decade, you know, 50 record year high profits preceding that. Any corporation worth its salt has funds. They have rainy day funds. They have reinvestment of the capital that they make as profit to ensure the safety of their infrastructure. To say that it's like it's just profit and nothing more, and, oh, look, there's a little bit of a downturn, we got to charge you more now, when there was record profit earlier, I mean, demand has went down amongst the regular people for gasoline. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, unless you're just totally naive and ignorant. And yeah. I just think somebody has got to come out and say that. That, I mean, if the governor, if anybody in the state is buying that load of, you know what, they'll buy anything.
Well, you know, Flint Hills is an unusual situation. It takes a royalty state royalty oil, so that's a different formula, right? And they produce mostly jet fuel, which you would think would be an enormous – I mean, there is an enormous market for it. How can they be losing money? I got to say, I don't understand. But Commissioner Galvin, clearly you're going to have to take a really close look, and I understand this agreement means – you get to really look at their numbers this time as opposed to whatever they tell you?
That's the idea. And I think the caller makes a good point that you have to look at the underlying numbers. You can't just take what the companies are saying at complete face value. You have to be able to get the records, get the underlying financial picture in order to make a true assessment of what the business opportunity is. You can't just look at it snapshot today. Hey, things are bad. Give us a bunch of money for the next 15 years, because as the caller indicated, it's a situation that would be easily manipulable by companies to just grab the time when things look the worst and see something and ignore it when they're making screaming profits. So we are going to take a close look. We are going to make an assessment. The other side of the coin, as we talked earlier, is that there's a tremendous risk to the state if we basically miss the mark and allow the big refinery to fail.
Yeah.
Hey, Steve, this is Karen. I've been
absolutely
thinking I need to correct a statement I made earlier about the AHFC funding.
Go ahead.
I think I said that it was $283 million. It's $238 million.
Oh, okay.
I was having a moment there, but just to make sure I didn't confuse people.
Well, you're the number person. Nobody else would think to correct that. Thank you so much. Jack, thank you for your call from North Pole.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
I just want to say, too, before I go, that, you know, I understand what you guys are trying to say here, but the bottom line is this is really simple stuff. I mean, the economy is going to hurt everybody, including the consumers. The idea that consumers are somehow going to be able to meet increasing pricing, and the only people taking a hit in profit are corporate entities. I mean, what kind of philosophy is that? I mean, this shouldn't even really warrant in-depth investigation. It should be simple as pie. If they can't maintain their operations here, then someone that can should come into the state and replace them. It's simple.
Well, yeah. You know, there's a long entangled history behind that refinery, as you know, and we could end up seeing the Alaska Railroad own it because they really need it.
Well, I think the question inherent in there is, are we going to go with just strictly a free market system and allow businesses to, you know, rise and fall based upon strictly profit motive? And with a situation like a refinery that is dependent upon by so much of Alaska, the question becomes, are we going to let it fail and subject ourselves to the vagaries of the market in the lower 48 to supply us with the fuel that we need?
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks a lot for bringing that up, Jack. It's a fascinating conversation. Big Dan in Tennessee weighs in on this one. I guess I'll throw this to you, Karen Rehfeld. I haven't heard from anyone in Southeast yet, and I think we all would like to see more money put into our transportation system down here, i.e. the ferry system. It seems the service gets worse every year. I live in Tennessee Springs, and to get to Sitka via the Marine Highway, I have to route through Juneau, as does everybody else in the villages. It takes 2 days to get from Tennessee to Sitka via the ferry now. And, you know, I'm sure you're not, you know, it's not your job to set the ferry schedule here. But at the same time, he's saying there should be more money for Marine Highway. And I understand the administration has essentially came out with a number, and that's what it thinks is fair.
Thanks for that question. We actually have, I think, done quite a bit for the Marine Highway over the past couple of years. The governor's been committed to try and bring some stability to the system and some consistency in the schedule. I think over the last couple of years, we've actually been able to implement a schedule that folks can rely on and go online and book and not worry about whether or not we were actually going to be able to take that trip. For a lot of reasons, I think it's important for Southeast Alaska to have the Marine Highway. I've lived here all my life. I know what a benefit it is, but it also has to be a system that we can maintain over time. We're going to have a number of these vessels needing replacement in the, you know, in the 6 to 10 year window, and there's money right now that was put in the vessel replacement fund for the next replacement ferry. So we think within another, probably by the 2011 budget, we're going to be looking at an appropriation to replace one of the vessels. So Governor Palin has been committed to keeping that stability in the system and trying to make it sustainable in the future. I know that it cannot always meet everyone's needs, but I think we're trying to provide a reliable system and one we can sustain into the future.
Last I heard, there was some improvement in the number of the amount of use the ferry system was getting, maybe through the more reliable, predictable scheduling.
We have seen an increase in ridership, and I think the Marine Highway has done just a tremendous job. They've done a lot of outreach into communities and are really trying to make this system work for everyone in Southeast. They got a great person in charge of Marine Highway, someone who. From Juneau that I know, and I just think they're doing a remarkable job and with the resources they have for that system.
All right, that is Office of Management and Budget Director Karen Rehfeld with us today on Talk of Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. APRN brings news about Alaska to public radio every weekday. APRN, we cover the stories that impact the lives of all Alaskans.
It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the governor's budget, and let's go to Ann, who joins the program from Eagle. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Ann.
Hi. thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of suggestions, and then I'll listen for the answers offline, off the air. The first one is we have been waiting in line to get an energy rater out here in Eagle for the homeowners' assistance. And so I'm hoping that you won't cut the AHFC funding too much because those of us who couldn't get a rater out, they weren't available in rural areas, and who the timing again is such that we need it in the spring, the rating, so that we can have the 18 months to work on our houses and that kind of thing.
I know that's been quite the sore point. Okay, what else you got?
Okay, the other thing is that as principal in a school, I would like to see the state pay directly for our fuel and energy costs rather than have it go through our school district budget, because it takes away from the instructional budget, and perhaps the state could buy the fuel at the cost they are now, and then, of course, then we have to store it. All right. Anyway, those are my two suggestions.
All right. Karen Rehfeld, I will hand you the second part of that question. Has there been any consideration of separating school district fuel costs from regular school budgets so that it's more handleable by the school administrations who are now seeing these immense cost increases?
You know, there have been discussions about actually separating out the energy costs from the school funding formula. The legislative task force that met last summer to go over some of the elements of the funding formula and decide what changes needed to be made did talk about this at the time. You might know that there's an adjustment in the formula that's called district cost factors. And so across the districts, we know that there are differences in costs to provide educational services, including their utility costs. So those adjustments are always factored into the formula. Those would clearly need to change if you were going to remove the energy component from the school funding formula and from the school budgets and how best to make that happen. I know that the legislature did not do that in the current version, but I know that there's going to be continued discussion about how best to pay for energy costs, how to assist school districts with some weatherization and other efficiencies that would help them reduce the cost of operating their school facilities, and then what changes might need to be made in the future.
Yeah. Well, Ann, as you know, whenever you ask the legislature to crack open the formula for state funding for schools, you could really be asking for trouble. Pat Galvin, can you enlighten us at all about the progress of the Energy Raider situation? I know this, we've heard this from other communities.
Yeah, I believe that AHFC is really trying to get a better handle on that aspect of their program.
And of course, you know, the basic problem is that people wanted to get this work done, but they have to get rated before they can have the work done, or else it doesn't qualify for the rebate.
Well, speaking to someone who I think was 3,000th on the list that I saw last when I checked online. Yeah, I'm very well aware of the problem. I contacted an Energy Raider, I think, about 3 months ago and was told they're not taking any more appointments until somewhere in the middle of 2009. So clearly there's a need to train up, get additional Energy Raiders on board. The demand is tremendous, and I think it just goes to the desire of Alaskans to do what we can as far as conservation. And it's the success of that particular program that's a bit overwhelmed the system. But hopefully both AHFC will be able to respond, and the program will continue.
There was certainly a huge amount of interest in that. Karen Rehfeld, director of the Governor's Budget Office, I have a question here from Oppie, who says, I want to know if the governor has somewhere in there in the bonds or in the AHFC or where fund the new Alaska Crime Lab. Do you know about that one?
I can talk about that. As you know, last year we brought forward a proposal to fund a crime lab through a GO bond package. The legislature had a lot of questions about the crime lab project during the session last year, and instead of putting out $100 million in GO bonds, they approved some $12 million for some design work and some site preparation. A couple things happening with that. One is we're still working with the municipality of Anchorage on a site, so we don't have a lease in place yet for a place to construct the lab. And the second thing is there were a lot of questions during the legislative session last year about the overall size and the cost of the crime lab as it was designed. What we're doing right now is getting basically an independent review of the design so that we can have some confidence in the actual size and cost of the building. A 90-year, $100 million crime lab is a significant investment to Alaska. I think that generally the folks that I've talked to and lawmakers as it was going through support a state crime lab. The discussion was really about the cost and the size. Were we overbuilding or was it the right size? So we wanted to get some confirmation of those design numbers before we bring that package back to the legislature for consideration, whether it be a geo bond or some other financing mechanism to build that lab. So and it's that, not currently in the budget.
That would come up through public safety, or who would be looking at that?
Public safety would be the department that would be requesting the funding, and if we're able to get some of these answers in a package together, we would bring it forward to the legislature later this, after they get started this session. But right at the moment, we didn't have enough of those answers yet to put it into the budget.
All right. We're talking about the governor's budget. We just got a couple of minutes left, and I guess we'll throw this one here from Glenn Allen to Pat Galvin, Revenue Commissioner. Pat, you said Alaska's in pretty good shape economically compared to other states, but what about this ICER study that says that two-thirds of the economy of the state is dependent on only two things, federal spending and the oil business?
Yeah, and
you can knock that one out of the park.
The nice thing about the oil business is that right now what we're seeing is, even with the lower price environment, we're still seeing the level of investment that we've seen in the past. And we believe that a part of that is attributable to the investment incentives that are included in the oil tax. We've talked over the last year, a lot of the focus has been on the increased revenue that the oil tax has generated for the state. But the other part of it that hasn't gained much attention until now is the amount of incentive that the tax provides for additional investment in new energy development in oil and gas in Alaska. And so we are actually projecting to see an increase in overall oil company spending over the next year or so. I think we're still waiting to see what the fallout is on the federal government side, just when we think that the federal government's going to start turning off the spigot for additional spending. The new administration starts talking about spending a bunch of money on various projects, including things in Alaska. So I think the jury's still out in terms of what the federal spending picture is going to look like over the next couple of years, but overall we're still looking good.
Anik Preiser, one last question to you. Is that AHFC? I think I heard Karen say that some of that money would go to that payroll thing that you want to do where they don't hand out paychecks. Is that right?
Well, what it goes to is replacing a 23-year-old system which does the accounting for the state.
And so basically that would end up with that electronic transfer situation?
We're actually going to try to implement the electronic transfer earlier than that replacement system.
Okay. Well, I want to thank all three of you for being with us, and thanks also to Bill McAllister for offering the three of you. Pat Galvin, thanks.
Sure. Always
sure we'll
offered.
Be talking again. And Karen Rehfeld, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. Special thanks also to Jeff Brown at member station KTOO. Thank you, Annette Kreitzer, Commissioner of Administration.
Appreciate it very much for the opportunity.
All right. It's been enjoyable. Alaskans had some great questions there. Next Tuesday, our show will be the holiday greeting show statewide. So if you have relatives someplace else in the state and you want to say happy holidays to them, this will be your chance next Tuesday. Gooseberry Peter on the controls. Duncan Moon is our managing editor, and it's Len Anderson on the phones. And a special thanks once again to Jeff Brown at KTOO. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Commissioner of Fun.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
BP Alaska. BP is focused on the future, getting more oil out of Prudhoe Bay and bringing Alaska's gas to North America.
Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.